Some of these are great opportunities. Many of these you may have already heard, but we'll follow up with an email checklist of these matters. And by all means, the purpose of this is to basically bring you into the kitchen, have you enjoy the aromas of what we're preparing on the stove, and for you to say, can you tell me more about what you're cooking now, John and team? And we'll have a call separately with you on these matters. So don't worry so much, as my history professor said in college, about taking notes. We always think notes are a great way to help you focus, but more importantly, know that try to understand the pieces as much as you can, and be prepared for a follow-up summary of today's call. So today, let's take a minute on tax reform. As you know, the House has passed a tax bill. Parts of it include the ultimate elimination of state tax. The Senate has an entire different bill. It too addresses having the estate tax repealed quickly as the House. Important about these items, because there may be a time when, in fact, we don't have estate tax. I think all people, certainly some of you, the sophisticates on this call, may say, why not wait to do planning to when the estate tax is repealed? And our answer to that is, if the estate tax repeals, that's part one. Part two is that you have to die in order to take advantage of the estate tax repeal. The most famous, or notorious, because it's never one thing to make light of, but George Steinbrenner passed away in a year when there was no estate tax. Had he decided to give the Yankees to his family and he was healthy during that year, George Steinbrenner would not have been able to do that. There was no repeal in the gift tax. What that means is the elimination of estate tax means you must pass away at the time there is no tax. It does not mean that you can give all of your assets away. Those on the call also know that you're not about to give all of your assets away, because, in fact, you need to live from those assets and to provide for yourself. And we have clients who are in their mid-90s and beyond who have made it very clear that I like my monthly six-figure income, and my children can get the remainder of the assets when I pass away. And even if there is estate tax then, they'll have to address that, but I am not giving all of my assets away. This is an important piece, right? So the repeal of estate tax, ultimately, part one, doesn't mean that your estate will avoid tax. It means that you've got to pass away. There is some talk about a repeal of the gift tax altogether. That in itself presents a whole separate set of issues as to whether or not something like that could pass. And then the question is, if you give assets away, do your assets get a step up in tax basis? Basis, of course, is what you paid for it or what the value is after you've depreciated or have had expenses, where that property's high line or red line marker is for value. And then when you sell it, what is the gain from that red line? The answer here is that when you pass away, today, all of your assets get a step up in basis, meaning that when your children sell those assets, they avoid the estate tax, the gains tax altogether on those properties. They avoid the gains tax. However, if you find yourself in a position where you give assets away during your lifetime, you need to be respectful of the fact that basis may carry over. meaning that your children, when they sell it, will pay a gain dated all the way back to the time that you owned it and what your original basis was. So stepping up basis is a very, very important part today in the new era of gains tax rates and so forth, that we have to be respectful. Every asset that you are of any materiality financially should be assessed for its basis, meaning what is the gain today if you sold it, and whether that should remain in your estate versus the estate tax and where we can save you money there. It is the reason why the single biggest part of our practice now is income tax planning and gains tax planning. And Maureen and Carol in our office now head that practice group as tax lawyers and CPAs and have built a robust income tax practice doing this kind of analysis and working in concert with us as to doing estate planning, but also doing income tax planning on an annual basis. It is also the catalyst for this call. So as we continue on with the tax repeal, what happens if we do have a repeal? Does that mean that estate tax then is done and we never have to worry about it again? I can imagine that those of you on the call as you listen are possibly saying you're setting us up for where the answer is. And the answer, of course, is that estate tax has been repealed 4 times in our history and then reinstituted typically to fund an overseas conflict or war. So our comments to you is, yes, if there is a repeal, there is an opportunity. If you pass away, yes, there is an opportunity if we raise the gift tax exemption. If we raise the gift tax exemptions, there's more money that you can give away, number two. And number three is what we always have to be respectful of the fact that when you transfer assets, are they the best assets to transfer? Which ones will grow the most off your balance sheet? Which ones can we discount the most before we transfer them to get the greatest alpha or gain on those assets once we transfer them? And then, of course, which assets have the highest basis, meaning that we want to minimize tax when those assets are sold, keeping low basis assets in the estate to get the step up. So all of these are critical strategies for you to gain what we call alpha, which is the return on your investment on your estate planning. What opportunities give you the greatest alpha on your estate plan? So we'll finish there, but in the end here, what is certain is that if the estate tax is repealed, there will be opportunities. We want to seize on them. What we do feel confident on is no matter what opportunity there is, it will likely be something that is temporary. Defining temporary is hard to say. It could be months, it could be years, it could be longer. But what we have found is our most sophisticated clients, meaning you all on this call, have said that the best plan is to continue to forge ahead and do work. And if there are opportunities that are more advanced because President Trump and the Republicans managed to give us further relief, seize on that immediately and help that amplify work that we're already doing, knowing that that window can close, but never to stop the steady process of continuing to till the soil and to do estate planning and asset protection planning and income tax planning along the way. So number two addresses estate freezes. What does an estate freeze mean? It means that if you have a $10 million, $50 million, $100 million, billion estate, you may say, I've got enough, McManus. I need no more. Well, your estate won't necessarily cooperate because it is well invested. It has sophisticated financial instruments. You have incredibly capable advisors. and your estate will grow, if only to track inflation. So the question here is, well, what do I do to stop the growth? Well, it would be a shame to have it parked in cash, because then you're actually getting a negative return on your money while the cost of living is going up. So never stop the growth of your estate. Continue to pursue in quantities conservatively that you're able to digest in the form of investment. But in the end here, what's critical is, how do I avoid that growth continuing on my estate and increasing the size of my estate tax? So the answer here is, start with blocking and tackling. Do the smallest pieces first and then move from there. That means taking advantage of the annual exemption. The annual exemption is the $14,000 gift that you can give to anyone that you choose in the world. Normally it means your loved ones. It means children. It means friends. It means your in-laws, to the extent that that's what you want to do, and grandchildren. So on an annual basis, this is a non-cumulative gift. So if you have not given your children or grandchildren this gift or friends, family members on an annual basis, you cannot do it again in January and try to do 2 years' worth. Each year it ends and it starts again, and you reset the clock. Our most sophisticated clients always try to get the gift in the first few weeks of January. Maybe they even get that money put to work with their financial advisors. Maybe they even consider, if it's the right gift, to do it in the form of a investment position and transfer that over, shares in the company, etc. But, so now you have a 12-month period of growth, and so the gift that's given in January has far greater power if it really explodes in value, because it's invested in something that fortunately went up particularly well. That gift had the same tax impact as you would have given in the end of next year, but one of them would have a yield or alpha that is 20% greater. A $14,000 gift could wind up being $16,000 or $17,000 if put to work right, versus a gift that's given at the end of next year at $14,000. So number one is, gift at the beginning of the year and invest it and get the return on it. That does not mean, however, that this year, and many clients for the first time are reminded about the gift in November and December, that group says, give the gift now, and then immediately in January, give a second gift. We have some of our clients, one client of ours says, every year I give a gift to each of my sons and daughters-in-law. It was the first time I've heard it. What a remarkable idea. Her view is, I want them to appreciate the things that I do for them and let them know that I love them. In the end, of course, the children will get the estate, but along the way, gifts are going to the daughters and sons-in-law. Never forget the grandchildren, the children either. My grandfather made these gifts to me and my siblings and cousins from his estate 45 years ago. And those strategies are still prominent as they are today. Back then, the gifts were $2,500. Okay, so number one, help to slow the growth by making annual gifts. Number two is focus on taking the growth on your portfolio and having that passed to your children through grads. Many of you have done grads. This is still an awesome time to take advantage of grads. Again, reminder, grantor retained annuity trust. You are taking the assets in a portfolio and you're loaning that portfolio to your children. And your children are paying you back on an annual basis a fixed amount of money plus a tiny bit of interest. Today, I always check with Ben in our office what the rates are. They're slightly over 2%. So you loan the money to your children. They pay you back your amount that they owe you over increments over 1, 3, 5, 10-year period plus a little bit of interest. And all the growth that takes place would pass to your children free of tax. So it is one of the most effective strategies that affluents can do to move assets off their balance sheet. It was where the bullseye on the side of the barn took place when President Obama was in office. He said this is far too effective a strategy for the wealthy. If you put $500,000 into a GRAC and your growth is 5% a year on a compounding basis, the number is 25,000 plus times 5 is 125,000 plus compounding may get you to 140,000. You would pay back the original 500,000. You'd pay interest at 2%, so you'd have 10,000 per year on a compounding basis. Maybe it winds up to be 60,000 or more, but you made 140, and so in the end here, you're almost at $100,000 of tax-free gifts to go to your children. That's what 500,000. When you transfer into a grant, $1 million, $2 million, $5 million, 10 or more millions per grat, each one of them has the compounding effect that President Obama was woefully upset with that continued to be a strategy. That strategy is still valid today. And under the Trump administration, we can expect that. So part one, continue to do grats. Part two, be aggressive in the investing inside the grat because the growth is going to your children, and your children are only paying you a small fixed fee of interest on the way back, and we can even structure the payments so that lower payments come up front and higher payments come up later. Number three is to sell assets of that you have in your family to your children. So a grad is a effective strategy when you're dealing with a portfolio where if you move $1 million or $10 million for easy math and you have a 10-year grant, you take $1 million of the portfolio each year and you make the payments back to your children or to you. Number one, and there's interest. But if you have a piece of real estate, it's not as easy to do. So with real estate, for example, if you own an apartment building, you would sell the apartment building to your children and let the income from the apartment building pay you back over a series of years. Many of our clients say, I don't want to give my apartment building to my children because, or one of many, because I want the $100,000, $200,000, $1 million of income I'm receiving. So, it's giving it to them, so goes the income. Well, if you sell that building to your children at the most favorable price, and there's more discussions we can have with you on that, then your children would then use the income on an annual basis to pay you back. So they sell it, you sell it to the children, you take back a note, and they use the income from the building to pay you back. So your income stream is preserved. Your children have purchased the asset at a discount. Your children then, all growth on that asset takes place in your children's name. It's a very, very common and typical way, and we're doing several of those at this point in the year. As interest rates are low, we cannot emphasize now that the idea of selling assets and holding a note with the required interest rate that the IRS imputes is a wonderful strategy because today's interest rates are so low. The IRS says you cannot give an asset to your children, sell it to them, and have them pay you back without interest. It has to be, in some respect, a commercially reasonable transaction. We agree. However, what is that interest rate? So the IRS posts those interest rates on their website, and we're happy to talk more to you about those rates and work out the math. But in the end, if the rates are 2% and the return you're getting on your apartment building is 6 or 7%, then the delta, that 5% yield, plus the real estate growing in value, is why these strategies help you freeze your net worth but still preserve income and allow your children to enjoy the growth. Okay. Well, of course, everyone on this call has created trust over the years with us. Some of the best meetings we have is when you sit in our conference rooms and we celebrate how much is in trust. for every dollar that's inside the trust, depending on where you are in the country. The estate tax savings is anywhere from 40 to over 50%. And so the value of that is cheering on the growth. So when you're getting 5, 6, 7, 10% on your money in your investments, and then we can also tell you that your estate has saved a 40% estate tax, then we're doing great things. So it's not unusual for many of you back in 2012 when we had the last great estate tax opportunity to move assets into trust. Over 150 of you on this that time, many are on this call today, seized that. And then the assets inside that portfolio experienced unmatched growth because the year of 2012 had extraordinary growth in the market, and there were 30% gains. The result was that $5 million into the trust went to $6.5 million, and now more like $7 or $8 million is inside the trust. So the question is, what can we do to further advance that? So for sure, taking your trust right now may be a great opportunity to purchase life insurance on those trusts and using the income from the assets inside those well-funded trusts to pay the premiums is one thought. Number two is to consider purchasing more assets in that trust. You may remember, for those of you who have already sold assets to your children, that you need to fund the trust with a 10% seed amount of money. So if they're buying a $10 million building from you, that $10 million that's a trust that's making that purchase has to have viability, says the IRS. And that viability means that there must be at least 10% inside the trust that it looks, smells, and feels like a legitimate transaction. So a million-dollar trust can purchase a $10 million piece of property. Well, now you have trusts that have plenty of assets in them, so use those assets inside the trust to purchase additional assets from your estate for the benefit of your children. There'll be financing. You'll still get your income. They'll pay you back over a series of years, but you sold the assets to your children at a discount. Should you be monitoring the assets? Of course. Our view is always be very fastidious in monitoring your portfolio. But equally in that instance, what you do want to focus on is getting the highest returns on your assets off your balance sheet, the ones that are in the trust, because those are the ones that will be avoiding the 40% tax, number one, number two. Number three is you should be doing annual assessments of your life insurance. So many of you have funded your trust with significant policies to pay for estate tax, to create liquidity for your partners, to create liquidity for your children, to balance off the estate. All great reasons. Some have just said, you know, I love insurance because of the compounding tax defer that takes place with a it's a substitute to a bond portfolio and gives me a death benefit. The Wall Street community has bought into that for years. We support it. We love life coverage. Every high quality plan includes life insurance. So you get one way or the other, we need life insurance. If it's a short term passing away, we need the insurance to fund strategies that did not get completed if you passed away. If it's a long term strategy, it's because we have further growth in the estate and we want to address the estate tax. That said, with the low interest rate environment, there are certain carriers who have underperformed what their expectations were. Letters have gone out talking about dividends that have been raised, or more dividends have been paid more than in any other year. All of these things have truth to them. But each company's performance needs to be assessed and the policy you have with them. So please make a note. We want to check your coverage those policies that are in trust that we've created for you, the trustee has a fiduciary obligation to make sure that that trust is in order and that the investments in it are doing well. We cannot emphasize enough that that is not something to be stressed about, but just something to be checking on your year-end checklist. Have us or have your policy reviewed for their performance. Okay, next is family limited partnerships. A key piece about family limited partnerships is to address discounting opportunities. So we have some clients that have said, look, I'm not prepared to transfer any more assets to my children. Tell me what I can do at least to shrink the size of my estate today. Shrink it today so that I'm positioned such that when I pass away, I've maximized the tax savings. If your assets are inside of a family limited partnership, the limited unit of your assets are able to take a discount. So if I have $50 million in real estate and I pass away, the value will be $50 million. Of course, we'll work really, really hard to try to get that value as low as possible with appraisals and so forth. Part two, though, is if it were wrapped in a partnership and you had limited units and then one general partnership unit, the limited units, because they lack control, again, limited partners, and because they lack marketability, because nobody wants to buy limited partnership units in a partnership where they have no control, those two issues have been a continually positive theme of where you can discount those limited units when you pass away. So we have clients that have $50 million in real estate, and if we can put that into a family limited partnership, we may get a 30% discount on those assets at the time of death. We cannot freeze those assets today. We cannot freeze them because the assets continue to remain in the estate, and that's what the client wishes. On the other hand, we want to be clear and we want to emphasize that under all sets of circumstances, we are at least taking advantage of the discount. By all means, this is critical. Okay. Next on the plan is to address what happens about the discounts on the family partnerships. So the discounting issue was something that President Obama had a tremendously difficult time with. Equally in that instance, he was not happy with where the wealthy were taking advantage of the strategy and said, I want discounts eliminated. So there were regulations that took place. 2704 came through, put forth by the Department of Revenue that should have passed just about this time last year. And everyone was in a rush to get their planning done and take their discounts before year end. Trump got in. He has put that on hold. And at the moment, his next step is we're not certain the direction he will go. But what we can take confidence is this discounting opportunity still exists today. But be mindful that when the next president comes in, these are two key strategies: the elimination of GRAS as a tax-free transfer and the discounting of family limited partnership units will likely be back on the chopping block. So strategies of using partnerships as discounts is essential when you work through things to do now. Even if you don't sell those partnership units to your children, consider wrapping your assets in the partnership today. Okay. Next issue for us is charity work. First of all, what happens if your estate exceeds the exemption amount? So we have seen many clients say, you know, that's my children's problem, my grandchildren's problem, and our view is, indeed, you've done spectacular things for your family, and you have been life-changing in those plans. But I must emphasize to you, your failure to do further work means that you are writing a check to a group of people where you're having no say and where that money is being spent. And you're presuming that they are making gifts in a way and doing things for the benefit of humanity in the same way you would do them. Usually that perks up people's ears because they say that, of course, you mean the U.S. government. So in that instance, I must emphasize to you that the estate tax paying that is the equivalent to giving it to the world's largest social program in a way that you have no say as to where and what it is for. And certainly you only have one vote, as all others. What we would rather have you consider, mindful that, and we just did a piece on affluenza that we received great press for, which was in Wealth Magazine. It's posted on our website about children receiving too much assets and how critical it is for them to be raised in an environment where they appreciate the value of making it on their own. We cannot emphasize more that we support that. Part two, however, is what about charities? So first thing is that many of you have considered, and we continue to support, the idea of creating your own foundation. The opportunities are powerful because the foundation is something that you will control. You will make decisions on making gifts. It will compound without taxation. You will have annual distribution requirements of 5%. But with all of your high-quality financial advisors, it's not unreasonable to outperform the 5%, and so that the actual foundation portfolio is growing beyond what your distribution requirements are of 5%. So part one is that. Part two is to address that you can give appreciated assets today and get a full discount on a full, rather a full deduction on the transfer of those appreciated assets. There are limitations, meaning that you have to offset that against your annual income, and so we can go through the formula for you on that. But if you cannot get the full deduction in 2017 tax year, you can certainly take advantage of that in the 4 ensuing years. You can carry forward your losses and your deductions for 5 years going forward. Creating the foundation also is giving the opportunity to fund charities to places that you care about that'll benefit you and your desire to meet the needs of those in need. In the past several months, those of you who have had foundations, we've asked you to reach out to charities beyond your typical donative intent to consider the needs of people in Texas after their hurricane, in Florida after the hurricane, in Puerto Rico after the hurricane, in the Caribbean, and in Northern California after the fires, and certainly, and no less, but probably even more, the tragedies that have taken place with the families that have lost loved ones with the shootings in at least in Texas and certainly in Nevada and even the terrorist attack we had in New York City. Each of these is profoundly moving on its own. So we are pleased to report that our clients with foundations who have all sorts of other charities have said, I can dig deeper, and they have made gifts to these charities. The New York Times caught wind of this and did a piece on one of our clients and covered us as well, fortunately, and literally flew to Puerto Rico to take photos of the work that our clients, your fellow clients' foundation actually made. Craig Granowitz, one of our clients, is in that paper for you to see. So the foundation is a great way for you to help minimize the size of your estate today by making gifts and having your children involved. Many of you, there is still time before year end to create the foundation. We'll get the tax approvals for you. You'll get the deduction in 2017, and you'll be off and running. For those of you who already have foundations, by all means, we want you to continue to make gifts. We can help you track whether or not you'll be able to take advantage of the deduction in 2017. Understand this year tax rates are higher than next year, so all we can do to make gifts in 2017, the better. While rates are high, deductions are more advantageous. Next year, as rates go down, deductions will be worth less. Always try to push your deductions into the current year and push your income into the new year. But in the end here, the key thing to emphasize is because this coming year rates are lower, it's all the more important for 2018 to push income into that year and push all your deductions into 17. So what can we do rather than just leave the money directly to the foundation? Today there are trusts where you put the money into the trust and the income flowing out from the trust could come to you in the form of tax-advantaged dollars. You could create a trust and have the income flow into the foundation right now, and then your loved ones get the pot, what's remaining after the funding of the foundation. And that strategy is called a charitable lead trust. The first one where you receive the income is called a charitable remainder trust, and then the charity gets the asset at the end. With a charitable lead trust, if your estate is sufficiently significant, the opportunity here is for you to say whatever assets are remaining in my estate when I pass away, I could lead to a trust where the income would flow to my family foundation and my family members would receive it, and then the remainder would flow into a trust for the benefit of my children. So rather than forcing an immediate estate tax on your death, you're saying, look, I want to keep these assets. I love the income that I have. And on my passing, then if my kids have to pay estate tax, that's too bad. But I'm not changing. I've done enough planning. That is a common mantra we hear. But what if we said, well, we'll leave it into a trust. Your foundation will be funded over a series of years after you pass away, and then whatever is remaining would pass tax-free to the children. That has received wondrous applause from clients who want to do no further work while they're alive but are charitably inclined and say, I've done enough. Let's fund the family foundation after I pass away with the additional assets to save the tax. So we cannot emphasize enough charitable giving, especially in this time of year, is right up your alley and right up our alley. Okay, we're on to asset protection. So first of all, we want to check and be sure that your assets with respect to property and casualty insurance is in order. You are reassessing what the values of your assets are. You have a new driver in the family. You have a new grandchild that's a driver in the family. You've put a pool in. You've bought a second home. You've switched homes. It is important to do an audit of your property and casualty insurance quickly. We cannot emphasize enough that we want to make sure that the insurance companies are doing their work to protect your assets. We also have clients that have said, listen, you know, I'm afraid I'm in a business that I could be sued. I don't want to deprive someone who's hurt from receiving the assets they're entitled to get. That is why I have insurance. But if this spirals beyond that and my insurance company goes bankrupt, perish the thought. We had some of those issues with risk and malpractice carriers for medical profession years ago. What are we doing to make sure that what I've worked for my entire life is not evaporated by plaintiff's lawyers? So we've got many clients that have said, tell me other strategies beyond my insurance, and one of those is to consider putting together a domestic asset protection trust. We call that DAP. And that can be situs outside of your jurisdiction, not uncommonly in the four top asset protection jurisdictions. Others are making headway, but Nevada, Alaska, for you on the West Coast on the call, Delaware and South Dakota for those of you in the center of the country, and on the East Coast, Florida has made great strides. We are seeing Florida because there's no state income tax. They have a homestead exemption where your home is not can't be taken away. But they're also moving to do good work in the asset protection area. In the end, what we always want to do is examine the laws and examine the legislature and examine the trust company, see what experience they have when attacks come in. Alaska has gone and been the most aggressive over the years in trying to be the most forward-thinking in asset protection. It's far away. It may dissuade plaintiffs' lawyers. On the other hand, places like Delaware have got almost 100 years of experience where the judges, the lawyers, the trust companies are all in on the understanding of protecting the assets, and we have found equally, if not more so, the analysis for a place like Delaware versus other states is critical to look through. But all of these places are doing great work to protect your assets. Do you have to put 40, 50, 60, 75% of your assets into trust? Absolutely not. But would it be good to know that there is some portion that has a much deeper event of lawsuits than otherwise? For certain, putting it in trust is the key piece. Okay. Life insurance, we've spoken about, but doing, of course, an audit on an annual basis, making sure that you're doing your annual crummy notices for your premium as are necessary, that you're funding the trust with the assets to make sure the premiums are there. Many of you have said, what additional things can we do with insurance? And so we have seen with some high-quality advisors the opportunities to do things like multi-generational split dollar policies where generation one, being the grandparents, have the assets, generation two has the health, and generation three has the need. So grandparents are done using all of their exemptions. Grandparents are, and so can't make any significant gift going further. Grandparents are too old, potentially, to get the best values on life insurance. Children are the ones that are, have the best insurability and are best suited to take care of grandchildren. So grandparents loan money to a trust for the grand, for the children, and the children will be insured on those policies. They will build up cash value, and then the policy, once there's cash, would pay the loan back to the grandparents. In the end, that gives a very high-quality, significant policy on the lives of the children that creates their own estate plan to help us pay estate tax when the children, which we call Generation 2, pass away for the grandchildren, which would be Generation 3. So grandparents create, children are the insured, grandchildren are the beneficiaries. The insurance is in a trust to avoid the estate tax. The funding comes from grandparents through a form of a loan. Grandparents get paid back so they avoid estate tax issues. Through the cash value that compounds inside the trust, we must emphasize to you this is a wonderful strategy, but that you must look at it very, very closely. Anytime you are financing premiums, you need to have high-quality lenders who are fixing rates with non-recourse. You have to have high-quality carriers who are providing insurance products that are giving us a continuously competent response to our concerns that they are performing well. So every year you cannot ever assure what the performance of the policy is going to do, but you certainly can look at history. And the top carriers have always provided that strong, steady return, even in the worst of times. But nonetheless, deep analysis would go on here. We can help. We've done products when there have been premium financing, and we think they are great opportunities, but certainly for the more sophisticated. Okay, we also look at insurance as opportunities where you can be doing private placement, where insurance policies compound without tax, but wouldn't it be nice to be focusing on certain funds that are performing particularly well, more than the typical insurance investment? So many of the carriers are now giving opportunities for alternative investments. Ben and I in the office have spoken with and researched some of these opportunities where returns have been pretty significant. We normally, when you're into hedge fund investments or private placement, you are not most tax efficient in those investments. When the returns come, they've got to be regurgitated out to the client, and then the income tax comes. But if it's inside of a life policy, you have a spectacular opportunity to shield that gain. This, again, is not for the wary. This is for those who are well-counseled and who are prepared to do their research. But just like everything that's worthwhile, the time for the investment and the legwork begins right from the point that you're ready to look into this. So the final two are planning with basis. So how can you avoid state capital gains on appreciated investments or business? Certainly part one here is to consider putting this into a charitable trust. And so moving the asset into the trust and then selling them inside the trust, you don't experience any loss because the charitable trust is a tax-free strategy, number one. Number two is that if you have assets that you keep in your estate when you pass away, they get to step up in basis. We've spoken about that earlier. And then, of course, number three, is that you can consider doing what we call upstream gifts, which is when you make a gift to a loved one who is generation one, the grandparents, who may not have significant enough assets, and when they pass away, they can leave those assets back into a trust for the benefit of you, or even more importantly, for the benefit of your children, where basis has been reset and assets can once again be depreciated. So those are three strategies to take advantage of avoiding the capital gains tax when you're about to encounter them. The other thing is to set up trust in Delaware where you can transfer the assets into a trust, and since they're situs in a state that doesn't have the gains tax, or it's a significantly lower amount, when the asset is sold in that state, you can avoid that. So a $10 million gain could potentially mean, if it's an asset sold for the family, could potentially mean a $1 million state tax. But with proper planning and moving that asset into trust, in a place like Delaware, we can go a long way to evaporating that. You can also consider creating trust in community property states. This would mean where a husband and wife have one asset that is very low basis. We see this a lot in one place in the country, and that is in Brooklyn, where real estate has exploded over the past 20 to 30 years and even the past 20 to 30 months. There has been growth in certain areas. Also in Northern California, where people have real estate that's also exploded, but may be involved in private ventures. And so the growth there has been significant too. In each of those instances, however, the emphasis is on how do we get a step up in basis for both husband and wife? So if husband passes away, only half of the basis would be reset. But there are certain states that allow for a joint step up, and those are called community property states. The one that has been most favorable to us has been in Alaska, where we can create the trust and get, if one spouse is ill, pass away, both of them get the step up in basis, because Alaska will allow you to create a trust even though you do not live in the state. For those of you in California, we have taken advantage of the community property trust and gotten a joint step up in basis, obtained the joint step up in basis. And it's something for us to consider as well. Is the state that you live in a community property state? But I finished by saying, for the majority of you, there will not be a community property, and so you'll have to create a trust in one of those few states, Alaska being the leading one for us most recently, and allowing husband and wife, if one is sick, to pass away, to have a joint step up, because the other one would then want to sell the asset, and on passing, on the first spouse passing away, the other one would want to sell. And so the idea is that the full step up could have a really powerful impact on your gains tax when you sell. As we move on to the last piece, and we wrap up on this hour of planning ideas, it is critical to remain in compliance. So many of you, first of all, that have made gifts to your loved ones, those have to be captured on your tax returns, gift tax returns. The IRS says you can give away $14,000 a year to whomever you want in the world. We're all good with that. But when you want to give more, you can avoid the tax because you have a $5.5 million gift tax exemption. However, you need to let us know. So in that instance, if you have not reported on to the IRS the gift you've made, then we find ourselves in a struggle. In fact, we were always experiencing clients whose inherited assets from their loved ones and their parents or grandparents never filed a return. It is an extraordinarily difficult process to go through reassessing those gifts. And your children are responsible because they have to resign the IRS estate tax return under the penalty of perjury. So you've done great work in moving the assets, but if you have not let the IRS know what the value of that gift is, your children are stuck with that. And frankly, it is a tremendous amount of work for them. So all of you on the call have already know that gifts need to be reported to the IRS, but we can't emphasize enough that at certain times those slip away. And so even the premiums that you're paying on your life insurance, there are generation skipping tax credits that we have to allocate. So it's critical to have those conversations on at this time of year. Number one, are you paying insurance premiums? And if they're allocated to not just your children and grandchildren, we have a generation skipping tax reporting requirement. We need to let the IRS know. Are you making gifts to your children or have in prior years, and we've given them partnership interest and so forth? We must report that to the IRS. And we want to report that to the IRS because we want to do everything that's proper and correct and legal, not only because that's the right thing to do, but also we then set the statute of limitations. If you don't file a gift tax return and you don't report your gifts, then the statute of limitations never starts. When you do, then you've got 3 years, and then you've closed the door, and the IRS now can no longer bring up your challenge. And that's the point that we must emphasize to you, which is get these complete and get the statute of limitations running so that that clock is then over. In the past several years, and each year more prominently than the prior, we are involved in what we call tax controversy. What does tax controversy mean? That means all the great good work that people are seeking to do during their lifetime frequently has a few bits of kernels of gravel on the road that we need to clean up. And so for you, it is essential, therefore, that the more we can do today, especially now armed with the tax controversy work that we're doing, the better off your children are when you leave this earth. So with that,